Hello, hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 58 of Business Therapy. Today's episode, we are joined by our producer, Mike, once again. Welcome, Mike, back to the show.
Thank you for having me again.
What we're doing today is a year in review episode. So as we start to wrap up the end of the year, we thought it'd be a great time to reflect on our podcast journey. And who better to curate the conversation than our producer, who's been on the podcast journey the whole time. So we're going to let him kind of drive a little bit of the Q&A or the interview style, but we may throw a few back at him too to see how he's been enjoying working in the background.
Perfect.
So Mike, why don't you kick us off and let's see how the year went.
All right. So the first question we've got up here. So I met you guys, for everyone who's listening out there, Sam and John found me on Upwork, and they are a, this is a part of a bigger machine that they're creating in the background. That is something called Truval, which as a software company. So essentially, guys, you know, right off the hop, like, what is Truval for everyone out there who doesn't understand what, you know, why you're doing this?
Yeah. So I'll start. Truval is a play on true value. And as Mike mentioned, this is our software company, and it's a startup that Jonathan and I are co-founding along with our CTO, Sang. And it is really meant to bring a lot of the nuance of mindful business practice, the intersection of mindful business practice, productivity, advanced consultative methodologies into accessible software products so that you don't have to hire a very advanced or experienced consultant to do work that a lot of businesses are struggling with, but you would have software tools that make the work possible without those kind of expensive resources. So that's part of our mission and sort of what we're doing practically, but I'll let Jonathan take a crack at his take on the company as well.
Yeah, I'm obviously in alignment. The idea of automating any aspect of consulting, starting, let's say, with a process improvement effort to something more broad, like setting strategy, really comes down to the idea that there are fundamental principles that are universally applicable. And I think if one thing we've seen over the year in the podcast, it's that you keep coming back to the same themes. You know, everyone has the issues of scaling. Everyone has the issues of when to optimize an operation. You know, like there's so many themes, but it comes back to the same fundamentals. And we're surfacing those because at the end of the day, every company and every entity knows their company. They know what they're trying to do. They know what they're about. And if they can combine that knowledge with these tools, they would be able to be a lot more effective and find their true value.
Yeah. And I wanted to add one more thought. And obviously, we could probably take the whole episode talking about Truval and why Truval. But I mean, it's obviously we're very passionate about it. I think the biggest thing about consulting is consulting can help a lot of people. And in a way, it's a very advanced skill set. But Jonathan and I are very passionate about scaling that knowledge because you, as a good consultant, you can only do so much. You can have people under you. You can try to scale out. But, you know, a lot of people come on the show and talk about their scaling problems. Scaling consulting, in my professional opinion, is largely impossible unless you're going to endeavor to take the task of being making the knowledge available to people, making software tools, automating, like we're talking about. You're not going to be able to help as many people if you've got the fundamentals that you have to offer. So a lot of Truval is trying to provide that value to everybody and trying to open it up. And really, I think what drives a lot of our passion is how can we take great business knowledge and scientific, you know, rigor and bring it to the masses. So that's, you know, and that's a pretty big mission. So I hope everyone kind of, if you're interested in Truval, we're young right now, but we're going to do a lot of great things under that header. And we're really excited about the upcoming few years.
And I'll add one more thing that's, you know, that we're taking it from a very positive take right now, but the statistics show 70% of enterprise projects are failing. Most consulting engagements, unfortunately, don't result on a return of investment that even covers the cost of consulting, et cetera. So there's something fundamentally flawed in how people are going about business right now. And that's what we're aimed at. We're aimed at a perspective shift through these tools that can address why something could be so fundamentally flawed and just persist and everyone's accepting these very, very bad statistics.
Very bad.
Just a quick left on that question. Have you guys been met with success with when talking to businesses who might be interested in Truval? Has it been like well received, or is it more of an abstract concept that you're trying to still convince people?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, from my perspective, people are very excited about it, but it is abstract. It's, you know, people are used to working with consultants and used to just having problems that are only can be solved by one way, which is bringing in a very experienced professional and having them work through it. And that's the premise of the whole consulting industry. So I think when people hear there could be software solutions to automate that experience or that exchange, it's hard for them to even visualize what it looks like. But if you tell a business, hey, you could get the same results, if not better results, to Jonathan's point, because a lot of the consulting is not working, you could get better results and you could get it using your own tools and your own steam and for much less cost, the prospect is very exciting for people, because who wouldn't be? You know, it's the thing that not everyone can pay for a lot of these resources. So, you know, the thought that they could get the same results for less cost is generally exciting. If not, I think they're going to need to see it to believe it. And that's our burden.
Yeah. And no one needs convincing of the problem. Like that's not a question, which makes it even more amazing that people just persist in solving things the same way when no one disagrees with the problem. I think that as you see on some episodes of the podcast, where a simple perspective shift really can change what people see and understand, I think that's what we're going for. That kind of understanding, because that's what it'll take to really change the current dynamic.
And that's where the podcast is a big part of that. You know, today's the podcast in review conversation. I think the company is our broader dream, but the podcast really is, it's not adjacent. I mean, it's part of the mission. It's part of the product. Having real conversations, changing people's perspectives, whether you're doing it on the podcast one at a time, or you're doing it with software for hundreds or thousands of people, if it becomes successful, this is all part of the same company, the same mission.
And which goes back to one of the main problems, and again, we see it in the podcast all the time, of consulting, is that the wrong question is usually being asked. And that's a very, very tough one to break out of from a business. If you're asked to solve X question and everyone's used to solving the problem that's on the table and not used to saying, wait, should we even be working on this? Is this the right way? You know, nobody wants to go all the way back to the beginning, but the question is, can you do it in an efficient way so that it's worth taking a whole perspective shift and still trust that the problem that you're looking at will be either solved or put in the right context for whether it should be solved?
Yeah. And I think you guys, well, I mean, you started to touch on it, but, you know, you guys are a business and, you know, as a podcast producer, I'm dealing these days with a lot of businesses who want to start a podcast. So essentially, you know, there's a lot of information you guys give every week. Why did you guys decide to do a podcast and not, you know, something else, right? Why did you guys decide that the podcast was the best way to get Truvel out to sort of the world?
Why did we decide that, Jonathan? Can you remember the exact inception of that? What do you think?
Yeah, I don't know that it was, we thought it was the best way, or we just thought it was a channel that we can act on right away.
Yeah.
And it didn't take any startup, you know, effort. And that there was enough to start a conversation with. And I think a podcast is just a great format to start a conversation.
Yeah, I think that was it too.
Yeah,
I mean, it was kind of how do we start talking to the market ASAP? And then the podcast, I think, you know, kicking around ideas. I think we both also had an inclination that we enjoy a forum where we could speak. We could just speak freely and we could speak directly to an audience. I think it's a very unique medium in so many ways. And I think it's been great so far. So I think it was whatever started the idea was a good one.
There's just another word on podcast.
Yep.
There's an authenticity in podcasts, in anything live, you know, recorded live like that, that I think people are desperately missing now when they look at even general news sources or traditional news sources or any kind of source of information. People are seeing, you know, the either the canned nature of it, or they're seeing the filters and layers that it has to get through to get there. Whereas the podcast is like I said, it's authentic. So I think it's a very unique medium and really lends itself to our mission.
Yeah, for good or bad, we're just showing up and talking. That can be awkward sometimes, or sometimes it can be
essentially.
Good. Yeah.
Well, I remember those first episodes. It was like, holy.
Yeah, those first ones were. Out.
Yeah. See, I'm recorded now. Now I'm recorded saying it. You show up, you talk, and it's funny because sometimes you get people like, you know, there is a level of really severe authenticity when you're getting grilled with questions, right? And then people are coming with their own problems that are also their authentic problems from authentic people, right? So that whole kind of like that whole mishmash of just authenticity, it works, especially with this kind of stuff. And that leads me kind of into the next one, go ahead, John.
Just that idea of any question coming at you or having to speak extemporaneously on any topic of business was also where the idea came from, because we're essentially saying that there are fundamentals that people are missing, and it goes across industry, it goes across size of company, it goes across every dimension. And the podcast is just such a great way to, you know, prove or disprove that, because we're saying, come on the show with any problem, any topic that you'd like to talk about, and, challenge us as to whether we can help you or not. Challenges live. So I that was really the thinking, that it would be really a great place to open it up. And for anyone listening, if there's anything you'd like to, if you'd like to come on the show and challenge a question, or, you know, explain why something has to work a certain way in business science that may not be in alignment with what we're saying, we'd love to have you. We'd love to talk it out. It would be really interesting conversation.
Let's go with this one. Have you learned anything? Have you learned anything about your own thoughts on business and mindfulness through the podcast? So have your thoughts shifted, or have you guys maybe turned over a rock that maybe wasn't overturned before the podcast?
Yeah, for sure. You go ahead, Jonathan, you start us off with that one.
We practice obviously the foundational element is mindfulness in the business practice and in any practice. And in fact, that business and personal is one and the same. One thing that I've seen mindful people do, and myself, because the question is, something I've learned or certainly about myself, it's that a lot of times I get caught up in what the mindful answer should be, even though we're always preaching against doing shoulds. Mm-hmm. And it short circuits the actual reaction that I'm having or I'm thinking of, and, working on that and being authentic within yourself and honest within yourself with exactly what you're feeling, and not even using mindfulness as, the filter. There shouldn't be a filter. It is just whatever you are. And I've seen that in the process of the podcast, where we ask people what the problem is, and then you drill and drill, and then you find out the problem is really something very, very different. And it doesn't matter whether or not that's a business problem. It could be a person, something that's, what you personally want to do. That's where the tension is going to be. So getting to the authentic problem, regardless of whether objectively, if there's such a thing, it should be a problem, is really the key.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And for my learning and engaging with the podcast, I learn all the time. I think part of the theme of a podcast, which is so important, is the interaction with the audience. And that audience in the beginning could have just been me and Jonathan and you, Mike. Like, we were all interacting, trying to create something together. Yeah. I think they say the best way to learn is to teach it. The best way to really learn and continue to grow is to try to articulate your thoughts, make them real, share them with other people, connect with other people, connect with an audience. And I think for me, every time I get on the show, I learn a ton from guests, even though, a lot of the back half of this year, we had guests come on the show, we were talking to them, and it looked like we were dispensing advisement or just kind of giving them our perspectives. In order to understand them and connect with them, we're learning something new every time. If it's not about their businesses, about the market, about the types of problems that are recurring. I mean, it's such an enriching and robust experience to engage with people in this kind of forum. I would say, it's been incredibly beneficial. And that's part of the reason why I think we come back to the podcast and why we've been enjoying it so much this year, because it's reciprocal. We're learning, we're giving, and we're getting just as much back. And I think that's been a really important experience for us.
Yeah, it's been, the show has had a few iterations over the last year, right? So to kind of, you know, and we're still changing. Next year is going to be, you know, a whole different change. So I guess that brings us to the next set of questions, which is more podcast specific. What was the most exciting thing about year one of business therapy?
I think getting it going was very exciting. I think I remember in the beginning just figuring out that Jonathan and I were going to take some of our passion for these topics and we were going to share it together and share it out in the public space was just a very exciting prospect. And also just going through our paces was very exciting from a year one podcast perspective. I mean, I won't say we're not awkward entirely, like we've shaken it all off. I think everyone has a little bit of awkwardness, you know, in this kind of scenario.
Yeah.
But I mean, we've come a long way. And I think, Mike, you can attest to that, which is that you get on a podcast like this and you have to get used to speaking like this. And it's just been very exciting all around, the growth, the challenge, the trying to figure out the right things to talk about and where we wanted to go with it. And I think the whole thing has been very exciting. It's hard to pinpoint one particular thing, but I guess I would summarize by saying it's our growth. It's our own growth as a team and our growth as an entity out there that can engage with the market in this way. I think that's really been exciting to watch us go from a baby podcast that really didn't know how to do anything to a show that feels like it's getting more robust every day. And really, we're just getting started. I feel like year one was really planting a seed of something that can become very, very special to me and hopefully others.
Yeah. Podcasting's hard, man. Podcasting's a difficult, you know, people think it's just flipping on the mic, right? But, you know, you guys took it in stride. I always tell everyone, like, the first 10 episodes, sometimes 15, even 20, they're just not going to be good. It's just, that's the black and white of it. It just is. It's the sky is blue. The grass is green. The first 10 are just not going to be that good. And that's where people usually lose it. Episode 8, 9, everyone's like, man, this sucks. Like, I can't do it. You got to kind of push past that. And after a year, the exciting thing is seeing us kind of like all kind of do that. Right. Yeah. What about you, John? Yeah.
I lost thread of the question just a little bit, but I don't want to forget. The most important thing I learned about podcasting, at least the start, was, and Mike, you know, credit you 1,000%, is just start speaking. Like, you know, So Sam and I, we had some questions, you know, like in terms of how do we organize, how do we, you know, set up. And you just kept driving, speak, you know,
just talk, get man. Talking. Just chat. That's it. Yep.
And the less time you spend, if you're so motivated that you have information you'd like to talk about to share with other people, you think you can add value, you know, to anyone. And so that's why you want to speak, then just start speaking, you know, like it's, and then you can leave all the other planning and analysis behind and learn as you're doing it. We were very blessed, you know, with that start because, we got into it immediately. We spend almost zero downtime, and to the extent we're iterating, it's the iterations have come through doing and just this kind of consensus being formed that hey, we want to shift, and we have a quick conversation about a shift, and then we shift, and we shift through doing. You know, we shift by having an episode like that, the one that we want to try or try things in real time. And don't spend that much time really planning it. And I would say that keeps it authentic and has definitely kept us moving.
And then right there, so the exciting, and you've already answered it, I think, but we'll go more in depth. What was the most difficult thing about year one?
I think dealing with the fear of us being terrible at this, you know, we got to follow our own advice sometimes about being mindful and just trying to pursue the show because we enjoy it and because we're being authentic. But honestly, for me, the thought of putting all this time and effort into it and just people not liking it, us being boring, the show not being engaging. I mean, that I think is the biggest challenge and the biggest difficulty that I would articulate, which is showing up every week when some weeks you feel like it's been a dud. And even the some weeks where it's successful, I mean, it's a production. You have to get in, you have to do it, and you're winging it to a certain extent on a week-to-week basis. And those times where you feel like you're really blowing it and you don't know if you can get much better, you know, it's just easy to get in your head. And that's part of our practice. But I think that's the difficult part. Just how do you know that you're going out there and you're creating a product that people like when in the beginning of a podcast, there's not a lot of engagement? And I think that was the biggest challenge that we had to overcome, or at least I would articulate from my perspective.
Yeah, I've just enjoyed, you know, the journey. I've enjoyed every process, you know, every part of it. And when we move the format to solving a problem for people, if nothing else, you know, there was the joy of someone being helped, you know, and sometimes being helped, all they needed to do sometimes was be heard, you know. Like I'd like to think the show shows that we've actually helped them, and we made some changes. We were adding value every show from that perspective alone. And I think going back to the question before, the number one thing I learned, or the thing that was most exciting for me, is just the power of perspective. You know, a shift in perspective. It's not like we gave someone some formula or, you know, funding or, you know, something, but a shift in perspective, the power of that, to help solve, you know, help people solve their problems. And even when we did Where Are They Now, you see in action how how just a shift in perspective gives very tangible results. That's just been thrilling for me.
Yeah, but Mike was asking, I feel like you dodged some of the question he asked. What was the most difficult thing?
Yeah, what was the...
As I'm thinking, like, that's what I'm saying. Like, I think when maybe I would have felt it was getting... There was something difficult in terms of, like, Sam and I were just speaking, we added people, you know, a business problem, and that was just a concrete thing to do. So I'm having trouble finding things that were hard or that, you know, I didn't like. Because even, like, sometimes, like, you're not, I don't know, you're tired or you're sick or something like that. I knew from just the few episodes, as soon as we got on air, I'd be there and I'd enjoy it. So I don't know. I didn't have too much time in my head on this.
Yeah. Would you say that, I guess, you know, you learned something about yourself then over the last year about doing something like this, that you're capable and it's something that you enjoy doing?
Yeah. I mean, I think generally I know I like talking. I think, again, going back to just, I think it was so critical, those early episodes, just not allowing myself to get into my head and just do. Because the market will tell us what they want, if they want to hear, you know.
Yeah.
I don't have to worry about that too much. I mean, I worry about it like we all do. We're trying to, you know, keep iterating and evolving the product. And we know that in the coming year, we have some exciting ideas on doing that even more so, because we are focused on the listeners. But from my perspective, you know, no, I haven't found too many things to be hard from that. If anything comes to me, I'll...
Sure. Yeah. Send it an email. I'll read it. And
yeah. Mike, I'd like to pause here, especially from your perspective. I'd love to hear your answer as producer. You've been in the supporting us, but what's been your biggest challenge and your biggest excitement this year, being in the background, making sure that we're keeping our ish together?
I would say, see, like, my background comes from like a big machine of like content creation. So you're not really you're hands-on on your area of it. But when you're looking at it from, like, you know, when you're quarterbacking it, you know, you find blind spots and you go, oh, I have to, you know, we have to come up with a topic, a guest, the short, you know, when I do the shorts, it's all based around an episode, but there's kind of a theme every week. So kind of mapping out all of that on a weekly basis, you know, it's quick fire. It's quick fire. And to be able to get that to cruising altitude was probably the most difficult, because there was... Remember at the beginning, you guys had a lot of questions too. Like, why are we doing this? How come? A lot of whys, a lot of whats. And I'm kind of sitting there going, guys, the game is just go. The game is just, like, you know, the gun goes off and just go. You know, you jump off the cliff and you build the plane on the way down, kind of thing. Right. And that's sort of where we got it. But the most difficult part was ushering you guys in, but also quarterbacking an entire show. Right. Because it's, even though there's maybe small engagement because you're new, you still have to show up as if it's, you know, a top 10 podcast, a top 5 podcast, right? So, and then working with, you know, Max is muted out here, but like working with a buddy who's also helping on parts of it, right? Trying to coordinate that with the copy and making sure everyone's involved in certain ways. It's putting together a show and then showing up every week, right? In a basis that's you know, oversight rather than just a part of it, right?
What advice would you give to someone doing, you know, producing a podcast and learning what you've learned?
Do as much as you can by yourself. So learn how to edit, learn how to edit video, learn how to mix audio. You know, you could, to be a one man band is great. But then you learn how it's done and then you could delegate a little better. So when the show does become bigger, become better, you know where your blind spots are. Got to have patience and you have to be self-motivated because just like when you guys show up some weeks, you don't want to talk. There are some weeks where I go, man, like I have to cut five of these shorts and, you know, maybe the episode was a little off and you have to figure out how to cut it right. Just so I give you guys the best product. You know, it's on my end too. I have to show up every week. Right. And then, yeah. You know, love it. I love the whole, you know, process of doing this because it's like, it's every day I get to come on here, create something fun. I think Sam, your last short I put up 10 minutes ago and we've got, hold on, let me check here. We just picked up 2 subs. And like now it's a game for me. Now we have 500-600 views. So I find I've gamified it now to go, okay, how can we do this? Right. So big piece of advice would be just to love it. Just love doing it. Have fun. Hop in front of the camera every once in a while. So, and that leads me to the next one here is, go ahead, Sam. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I want to insert, I'm struck in this moment by the idea that's coming up on how we enjoyed the podcast. What have we learned? What success looked like on the podcast? And it all comes back. It comes back to the answer of just showing up. I think that's a lot of the theme. And I just wanted to call attention to it because a lot of what we also tell the guests, it's if somebody said, how do you have a successful podcast? The number one ingredient, it's from the Mike School of Thought, is just show up and do it. It's just kind of be there and do the thing. I mean, but I think that's a really important life lesson to being successful in anything.
And it's also too with a podcast is what does success look like to the people doing the podcast? It's, you know, is it you want to be top 5, you want to be a top 10 in your category, or you just want to have a little machine that every week is just a different type of content that's just out and it's, you know, and it's working for you. So to define success for your own show is also super important as well. I'd throw in there as well. Okay, to get a little more granular here, what were your favorite either episode or episodes over the last year?
I had a lot of really great fun with when we started to get into our guest flow, when we started bringing on people with real problems. I can remember a lot of episodes where I was also learning a lot about new businesses. It's really exciting. I remember we had, I think it was TJ, a gentleman named TJ, who was doing some really cool stuff with locker organization and like logistics and operating stuff. I really enjoyed talking to Allison about spirits and her post-COVID challenges. I just think the best episodes were the ones where we had really interesting companies dealing with really modern issues and they were willing to come on and just speak their heart and what they were dealing with in a really safe space for everyone. And I think that those were my favorite. Just name a few. Nico came on and talked about networking. And then we had a follow-up episode where he said the show really served him well. Those are the kind of moments that stick in my mind because you really impacted somebody positively and everyone had a good experience. And that's where I think we're having the most fun. It's kind of our sweet spot.
Nico was, especially because he was a Where Are They Now, probably was my favorite experience, at least from the podcast. Because during the episode, he asked a very specific question about networking. You know, how do I network? And then we took it several steps back and, you know, came at the question very differently. And I had judged that he wanted very tactical information and that's it. And wasn't looking for the information we were giving him. And I felt, you know, when the show ended, we weren't helpful enough. And I didn't know how to make that shift. And then he came on to the Where Are They Now? And he's like, everything changed. It's been amazing. I just, you know, thank you. You know, this has been great. You know, so, you know, that taught me quite a bit. It taught me that you go through your methodology and you do what you need to do. It's good to, you know, definitely, I like the Where Are They Now, so you get feedback. But that you never know what's being heard or not being heard. And that was just very, very exciting for me, that whole dynamic. But like Sam said, there's been so many guests that I thoroughly enjoyed. But I'll leave it at that.
I liked Franchares, that Franchares episode. I thought that's such a wild idea to just invest in local franchises. And in Canada, I don't even think we can do that. And I go, man, this guy's got a $1 billion idea kind of just in the ether here. So that one to me, I found that one really cool. That was a really cool one.
It's so topical because, you know, with what's going on with FTX and cryptocurrency, people are really thinking more about, you know, what is, the selling, like selling of any kind of a market, you know. So he's creating and Franchares a new market. And and people are starting to say, okay, what is a market, you know, and how is it created? And who decides that this is a market? And if it's real, how do I even know, like, I'm putting money into selling, like, where's it going? And what's the regulation? So, you know, the Franchares journey, I actually invested in it. Post the show, because I was very interested in staying connected with it, because I thought, like what we're seeing with FTX and everything else, understanding these dynamics and how this plays out is very interesting. Because we also had someone on the show who did fine wines. It was creating a market there. So clearly, and I think that's something, even with what's going on with FTX, we're going to see a lot more of. It's going to accelerate, not decelerate. Very interesting.
You guys keep nailing the roadmap of these questions, because on the FTX thing, I guess it'd be in the same breath, but what business trends emerged over the past year that you guys thought were either interesting or we'll start with the first one that excited you the most or thought that were the most interesting?
Yeah, for me, just a general trend that I think the podcast really highlights is just the idea of how open the frontier still is for people to use technology to better connect different people and functions. You know, you think about the different companies we saw, like we're talking about new markets emerging, we're talking about logistics, we're talking about all these different things that are technology enabled. And there's ideas coming up every day. And the new theme is we're just really at the cusp of becoming a fully connected world. Like, we've had the internet for a few decades now, and I think we're all seeping that in, but it's just very exciting. And I think very prominent pattern of the show where people are coming on and saying, I'm looking around me and everywhere I throw a stone, I see a new way to use technology to better facilitate communication, integration, you know, more autonomy in certain functions. Like, let's break apart the big stuff and get all these small connected pieces that are all talking and more efficient. I just think, I know I'm speaking in very broad terms, but I think it's very exciting. I think the idea that we're getting a lot of decentralization and technology enabled connectivity in so many different facets of business, we're really just riding the front of that wave. And I think it's going to be characterizing business for the next few decades. That's my professional opinion.
If I could get you to go a little more specific, maybe, like, what specifically, like, do you think crypto is the most exciting right now? Have you seen something like Franchares? Like, what to you excites you the most in an emerging business space?
I think the Franchares thing is a big conversation. Even the wine thing, like Jonathan, just piggybacking off what he was saying, which is you can now with technology connect people's energy, which is what money is, right? If I invest in something, I'm putting energy into it and I'm hoping to see that it becomes successful so I can reciprocate some of that energy back. That now is not constrained to financial vehicles that a bank held or the stock market held. Through technology, right, that sharing of energy can happen with everything and anything. It can be franchises, it can be wine, it can be whatever you want. So there's that whole aspect to it. But then even more broadly, like, we have just recently, we had an episode where people are trying to connect people with leftover food. We're trying to connect people with, you know, like I said, packages, with people who want to deliver packages. We've had guests come on trying to connect, you know, people who have very nuanced needs. Like, I have to have very tight allergy restrictions with different types of food. I mean, it's basically, there's no limit anymore to finding the smallest niche of interest that people want to put energy toward and then creating bridges through technology to connect energy to those sources. So in a way, I'm trying to articulate a theme. I think that's with all these guests and companies that are coming on that have all these ideas about how to use technology. What we're doing at Truvel is the same thing. How do we take something that used to have to be very expensive handshaking through consultants and, like, high-level business conversations and bring it into tools so that everyone can grab it. You know, I don't know. I think I might even, you said be more specific, and I might even want more broad. But I mean, to me, it's just the sweeping pattern of we can really have conversations about things that we've never been able to have before and connect people from all over the world who want to have these conversations about anything. And it's very exciting.
For me, the most exciting is augmented reality. That just the idea of taking the knowledge that exists and being able to apply it right at the right moment, you know, and put it in context. I see those things, all that all those capabilities coming together at the same time. So you see it across the episodes we did, starting like even, going the value of college education, you start thinking about, okay, what information do I actually need? And, what's the most applicable? And, you really start refining that. And the earlier we start that, the more there's going to be a desire for pointed information. And, that's one of the failings of the searches on internet, on the internet is just, what comes back to you. So, but as that gets better and better, and there's more competition in that space, and as people can associate it with, I don't know if it's just wearables, it's because it could be just in a, like we had a guest on who did surgery with augmented reality. So as you could see the point of use more, there's of course Meta, but, I think that's going to be reserved for gaming for a while. But just the idea of being able to apply the knowledge in a pointed fashion at the point of use, I think that's definitely something that has been a long time coming, but now you really see it coming together.
Yeah. I'm watching the NFL dissipate in front of my eyes on TikTok. There's a guy who I forget the name of the game. It's a Madden game, but you put on the headset. You are the quarterback. You're behind center. You're actually like running plays and flicking the wrist. And I go, in 40, 50 years, like that's how you're going to do it, right? No concussions, no torn ACLs. That's wild to me that, there's a potentially something coming to snap up actual real live professional sports, right?
So right now, like you could see how they could rebuild a human. And that's why I connected artificial intelligence. You could see how, like, and there's so many examples right now, like the poker, they've proven that it doesn't matter. Like you have to read the person, et cetera. No, the computer's going to win every single time. If you
put it in poker.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. And so you think bluff, what about bluffing? Whatever. There's enough knowledge and information and machine learning that they're going to win. So it used to be chess, where it was, there's a right answer, a wrong answer, but now it's not just the numbers that you're reading, but you're reading a human, who might be bluffing, et cetera. Sure. So you see how they're able to get to the point of like, okay, I could have as much information as a quarterback, even though I've never played a game. But what's going to be really interesting is when you take someone who's already at a professional level and now they could see, oh, this person 80% of the time, he's going to, shade to the right. So there's going to be a gap. 80% of the time, there's going to be a gap. I'm going to, call an audible here, and I'm going to throw. That's where it really gets exciting.
Okay, so the human element mixed in.
Exactly. So yeah, you take it's optimizing the human beyond what they're capable of currently because they now have information, that they could, like right now, everyone always talks about in business, use data. Data should drive decisions. I could tell you data, either people don't know how to collect data or, they're just waiting for some magical way for the data to, be meaningful to them or something like that. But even when they have data, I don't know what the data would show, but maybe 50-50 that they actually follow the data. Because if it doesn't meet up with their preconceived notion or some broader idea or something like that, they don't always go with it. But if you could put that information at the point of decision-making so that it's impossible to ignore, and if there's replay for that, that's very, very hard to change. And that's, I think we've been on the cusp of revolutionary change multiple times, and I think artificial intelligence is probably the most revolutionary that everyone's excited about. Because it's a whole new consciousness, essentially. But I think what holds people back is just the human element. The change that actually occurs is the change that can get past the human element, that people don't have to agree to embrace or selling. It just is. And you have no choice, you know? So the problem is, as long as it's a choice to go into the brave new world, you know, it just fits and starts. It's very hard. But if you're faced with a decision in a moment of time that says, if you do this choice, you will fail. If you do this, you will succeed. That's much, much harder to get around.
It's the next generation of automation, which is just generally very exciting.
And then on the flip side of that, I know running out of time here. I'll hit you guys with three more. On the flip side of that, what trends most concern you? And I'm not talking about AI is terrifying and it's wild. AI is terrifying and it's, you know, Skynet's coming. But more maybe from an entrepreneurial standpoint, like what trends from entrepreneurs have made you guys kind of raise an eyebrow and go, this one might not be something that is with us in the future?
So I can answer that one pretty quickly from my perspective. And it came up multiple times throughout the year. It's still the pervasive Silicon Valley originated venture capital and investment culture in the startup community that Jonathan and I have talked about in multiple forums where, I mean, even now in the public eye, we've seen things like FTX, we've seen things like Theranos, and maybe not completely applicable, but the idea that giant companies can spring up overnight and become unicorn companies and that you're going to get there without doing the work. And the work is really convincing people to give you millions of dollars to run out there and just hack this thing together and prove out an idea. I think it's still a lot of the playbook that a lot of young entrepreneurs are subscribing to. And, you know, we've spoken out against it on this show, but I still am concerned about that trend in entrepreneurship that people think, you know, we can skip all of the planting the seed and tending the gardening and just get straight to harvesting the fruit with enough money. And I really think it's a toxic cultural element that's still floating around and I'm hoping to see it leave. But it's still something that concerns me.
I'm still a little stuck on the AI, the terror, you know, that, I know that's not a topic, but I'm so excited about AI because what I'm seeing in AI right now, you know, like I write music and, there's the AI is getting so good that it can compose songs, you know, beginning to end. They're trying to apply it to basic coding. You know, they're applying it to a lot of things that have been traditionally been thought of as very human. You know, and what I see it being applied to, and where I think it's going to succeed, is on things that are very generic. So it's like Sam said, it's another form of it is automation. But it's going to automate things that just people instinctively resist because it goes to what they do. But to me, it will reduce the amount of work that should be automated, and you know, in favor of the next level work that you know, it you truly see the evolution of the species on many levels.
Yeah, no, AI to me is insanely exciting. I'm more talking about like, on an entrepreneurial, I guess, on a case-to-case basis, what trends are a little bit troubling to you that you see?
Yeah. So the troubling for me is, I think, like I said, the human element of people just the natural resistance that occurs, and people having a plan of how their life should be, or how a job should be, or how a company should be, and that should become so entrenched and so strong that all the change that's going on around it almost can't be heard, you know, or seen, because it's been so ingrained, you know, starting with school. So I think one of the trends that is troubling is the ability for every story to be cast in the terms that people understand without incorporating the changes that are occurring.
Yeah. But I think that speaks to a broader, and I want to go back in my answer about, you know, this whole VC culture is one troubling aspect, but I like where Jonathan's taking it. And that's the VC thing is a subset of this broader idea that troubles us. And is part of the reason the show exists is that people are looking for playbooks, and they're looking for guidance, and they're looking for comparing and validation, and we're not embodying ourselves. I think that's the broader way I would articulate it, which is that the most troubling thing about our youth and our entrepreneurs and our existing businesses is that everyone's trying to be something accept what they are already, if I had to summarize it. And that's troubling.
And the combination of the two, it almost is making people start to realize that they could automate their lives from beginning to end and it won't make a difference. So by that, I mean, like, all the shoulds that you should do. So I should get a job that should pay me, you know, for status or whatever. And I should go into X job because I'm told I'm good at this kind of area, whatever, as opposed to choosing what you want to do in a world where the should path is becoming so well known that it could almost be automated from beginning to end. It really will force people to question life. You know, what is life? Why are we here? And I think that's going to be very, very scary for people. And that might be why people instinctively resist automation and resist artificial intelligence, because it becomes a question as to what's their purpose. And for me, that's exciting because I'd love to expose that more so that people ask that question a lot more and ask it a lot earlier in life or at any point in life and start exploring it, as opposed to going from beginning to end of life and saying, hey, we could have just automated that, you know? And
yeah. You're asking people to stare into the void a little bit.
Exactly.
Oh,
exactly.
Boy. Oh, man.
See what comes out.
you guys answered like three questions in one there. So I will, this is the last one. We'll tee it off here for the new year. What general business advice would you give to new entrepreneurs about starting their own journey? And then in that same question, what can people expect from business therapy in the new year?
Have fun. Be authentic. And that's probably the first things that just popped in my mind, which is, if you want to start a business in the new year, and what's going to be the theme of business therapy now and always is be present, show up, and just do you. I mean, I know that's kind of trite, but I mean, it's knowing what you really enjoy and you're passionate about and what gives you energy and cultivating that in your life and in your business, which really should be one and the same. And that's my general answer.
Yeah, mine's similar in that whatever energy started out to make you want to get on a podcast or make you want to start your company, never lose sight of whatever caused that energy. Because the second you lose sight of that, you start chasing other things, you will find it very difficult to continue. And if I had to say, like, the number one problem that we see for people coming on the podcast, it's that somewhere along the way, they lost sight of it or thought they should lose sight of it. And we're trying to connect them back to that energy.
Yeah. And do more and think less. That's one of my themes of the year.
That's a good one. That's a good one. And from advice from, I'll rope Max into this too, because we're both kind of on our journeys. It's going to hurt. It's going to hurt, but the cost of it, or the outcome is I think freedom. You know, I'm doing this because I want to take control over my time. Right. So for me, and I'm sure for Max as well, it's the journey towards ultimate freedom. So whatever you have to do to achieve that, I say fire it up.
Yeah, I love that. That's a great way of saying it. The second you get off the should, or the second you get off the fear, you know, it's there's a lot of freedom in that. People might not want it, you know, in many instances, but the alternative is not very interesting.
Yeah, yeah. And also the no pain, no gain. I'd like to pat it a little bit, what, you know, you're saying, Mike, and saying that a very wise man once told me, you can't grow if you're comfortable. So the other way you can say that is you should always be slightly uncomfortable. And that doesn't necessarily mean you have to be on the rack and being tortured or like be in total pain. But I think, Mike, this speaks to what you're saying is there's no evolution without discomfort. Because there's nothing to push you forward. There's nothing to make you want to evolve or kind of get out of the situation you're in. So if you find yourself too comfortable, it's gonna stunt your growth. And I think that's a really important, that's a good New Year theme in general. Like, how can you make yourself uncomfortable this year coming into the new year? And how are you going to push yourself? And I can say this year, part of my discomfort was doing a podcast. Never done that before. Mm-hmm. And here we are. So it's been a great ride so far.
And for the next year, we plan on covering a lot of some topics we raised during this podcast, in a lot more conversational forum with people who want to speak about those topics. So we're expanding it beyond just having a business problem, but guests coming on the show and being able to talk about something they're passionate about or something they're highly knowledgeable about, and expand the information that we can share with our listeners.
Yeah. Yep. So tune in as you have been tuning in. Tell your friends. We're going to, like I said, we're doing another iteration. Like Jonathan just explained in the new year, we're very excited to expand and continue to expand and make the show more expansive. So definitely I'd like to end the show today and end the year really with Mike. Thank you very much. It's been a real pleasure getting the show off the ground. Max and all the other staff who have been supporting us, we really appreciate the efforts. So we've been having a lot of fun, and I think we're going to have even more fun next year. So for anyone tuning in, thanks for your support, and continue to engage with us and show us how we can make the show better and continue to share these themes of business and consciousness and mindfulness with the world in a way that hopefully we can all kind of have more fulfillment and get our footing. So that's my for the new year thoughts.
And I just have to add on air. Yes. Thank you, Mike. Thank you, Max. I mean, this has really been an amazing partnership. We really, really appreciate it. And, a lot of credit to you for us being here now, you know, not just in the early stage of the show, but just keeping us going throughout. Really, we really, really appreciate it. And if nothing else, like, it's been a great year. We've enjoyed it so much. So thank you.
And, more people need to work with Canadians.
Yeah. that's the issue.
That's right. It's just got to work with Canadians. That's all. We're chill. It's all fun.
Sam, thank you. I learn a lot from Sam all the time. And one of the things that keeps me mindful is a lot of times if a show is off or if I'm not comfortable with that something, Sam and I, you know, touch base right after the show, and we could be really authentic and raw and release it. Which is, by the way, my favorite moment of the entire show, the entire year, was when Sam said to, it might have been Nego, "I release you from feeling that you need to do X," you know, and literally just seeing the power of it, go across his face was amazing. So yes, thank you, Sam, as well.
Absolutely. And we'll end on that note when I'll say likewise to you, obviously, Jonathan. Sometimes we don't call it out enough, but you're the partner in crime here. So we've started something cool this year, and I think we're going to continue into the future. So thanks for your unwavering support also. And with that, I guess that's wrapped for the year, right, Mike? That'll be it for this. So
that's it. That's it. This goes out Monday and then a little 2-week break. And for everyone listening, we're back up January. The first episode will be up January 8th because we're going to record that first one on the 6th. So January 8th will be the first episode of the new year.
Awesome. So with that, everyone, whatever you're celebrating or hopefully just getting some well-deserved rest, enjoy your holidays, enjoy your break, and we'll catch up with you in the new year.